But the topic today is about communication, and specifically what we plan to talk through here are a couple things. The first is clear communication. What does it look like to clearly communicate an expectation or a need within our relationship, which is sometimes hard for different reasons, okay? And then the second thing we're going to talk about is specific or practical skills to use when it comes to those difficult conversations that you never have, right? that come up in the marriage relationship, all right? So let's start here first with the scripture, Proverbs 25:11. It says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. And in other places, it talks about the power of the tongue, in James specifically. And think about a word spoken in the right way, at the right time, in the right place, whether it's for a challenge or to encourage, is a beautiful thing. But it's difficult, right? It's not quite that easy. So I want you to think about this. Just imagine at the end of your work day that you come home, or maybe you've been running kids here and there, changing diapers, washing dishes, and you come home and you plop on the couch next to your spouse. And you're thinking, there would be nothing better right now than a nice back rub, back scratch. So you snuggle up next to him, and you do that, you know, universal shoulder roll that signifies scratch my back. And your spouse is sitting there on their phone. They don't seem to notice it. Slightly frustrated but not defeated, you turn and reposition yourself and start rubbing and scratching their back. And once you're done rubbing their back, they turn to you and say, gee, thanks, that was great. And then they turn back to their phone. They just broke the number one rule. If someone scratches your back, you scratch their back, right? Everybody knows that. So that's not the only nonverbal agreements we make, is it? Like, we make agreements in our heads without sharing that with our spouse. How about this one? If you spend the evening making a delicious dinner for your spouse, they're bound to help you with the dishes, right? It's just part of the deal. I work hard making the supper, you do the dishes. Or what about this one? If you stay home with the kids all day, your spouse is bound to take care of the kids in the evening, right? You've been there with them all day. Or this one, if you put in a full day of work, your spouse will give you the night off, right? You deserve it. You've been working hard all day. You can come home, take it easy. Or if you buy your wife flowers and chocolate, she'll want to have sex with you, right? It's just part of the deal. Or this one, if you sweep the floor, wink, turn around three times and say, I love you, your husband should automatically know that you want to put the kids to bed. Now, obviously, some of these are just statements, but how many times do we make expectations or create expectations and make agreements with our spouse in our heads without communicating it to them? Expecting them to know. So why don't we share? Well, sometimes there's a couple barriers. First is, it may be, like this first one here, believing that asking for what you want is selfish. That expressing your needs, expressing your desires, or sharing them, that somehow through experiences or something you've been taught, that that's a selfish thing to do. Or it could be a sign of weakness. Maybe the way that you were brought up, or maybe your experience is, I've got this, right? I can do it on my own. That I don't need to ask for help. That asking for help is a sign of weakness. Sometimes there have been experiences in our life where we have been vulnerable, where we have requested things, and there's been a deep rejection or a hurt. Then what happens the next time that we make that request or open up? And then finally, the feelings of vulnerability and fear. So if you think about it, sharing our hopes, our desires, our dreams is a vulnerable experience. Because as soon as we open up and share that, it's out of our control. It relies in the one that we made the request to. And so that's a vulnerable experience, and sometimes it might just feel easier to not open up, to not feel rejected, but then that leaves us not feeling any less resentful. We can count on it not being met, right, if we don't share it. So I want you to think in the position of a listener. So if your spouse was to share something with you, let's think of options other than the secret expectations and cues that we just talked about, all right? So what I want you to do is just hear this as if your spouse was talking to you. Option one, I'm always cooking dinner and you never help me with the dishes. You're always just there in the living room on your phone while I do it. Why don't you help me for a change? How does that sit with you? Or how about option two? Just maybe, you know, you could help me with the dishes if you want. Or option number three. This is really not a good one. Do you want to help me with the dishes, or would you rather just sit in the living room on your phone? Do you really want to know the answer to that? So, in each of these, there is certain requests being made, but it's unclear, right? Even for this one, or the option two. And then we move into option three, which is, can you please help me with the dishes? Which is fairly clear, right? There's an understanding of the need, the expectation, but one of the things that it leaves out is, does that mean tonight? Does that mean tomorrow? Does that mean next week? Right? So what are the components when we think about, whether it's a simple request or maybe even a more vulnerable request, in our relationship? We often quote this Ephesians 4:15 passage. And certainly, one of the things we're talking about here, even in this graphic, is the components of a healthy request. What does that look like? But we also realize that truth spoken without love, it loses, it's lost, its meaning and its purpose in an intentional way. And so obviously the request, body language, tone of voice, these things matter, don't they? Is it wrapped in love? And so as we think of components of a healthy request, the first is a desire or what? What is it that we want? What is it that we need? The back scratch, right? The back rub. Next is the why. Why is it that we want it? Why is it so important to you? And then when? When is it that you'd like to have it? And then finally, the result. Or in this case, if that request was granted, what would that do for you? How would that impact you? Okay? So let's use an example. The same, we went through four options. So let's look at an example. Here of a healthy request. Honey, I'd love some help with the dishes. So that's the desire, right? That's the what. I'd love to have your help. Number two, I worked hard making dinner tonight. That's the why, right? I've been working hard. I'm tired. And I'd appreciate it if you could help clean up, right? If you help clean up. Can we do dishes together now? That's the when it occurs. And then finally, it would really make me feel loved, which is the result, right? Fairly basic and simple, but clearly communicated. Expectations are not left unclear. Okay, so this next section we're going to walk into is really specifically about those areas that is difficult, when the emotions are high, what are practical skills that we can engage and use in those moments? Okay? So what I'd like you to first think about in your relationship, with each of our relationships, there are what I would refer to as hot topics, meaning the topic of conversation has led to many or some frustrating conversations together that either one of you or both of you left feeling misunderstood, angry, frustrated, and it was something that was really important to you. But those hot topics for you as a couple may be different for another couple. So as we walk through here, what I'd encourage you to do is, for you as a couple, what are some of the examples of difficult conversations? What do they center around? Is it the work, home life balance? Is it in-laws? Is it money? And so as we walk through this, I want to encourage you to apply some of these skills practically to those conversations, okay? By the way, so these are skills that are really pulled right out of Crucial Conversations, which there's a book and there's a whole training piece on that. It was designed around really the business, but a lot of these apply right to marriage, to communication, to effective communication. So how do we usually handle difficult conversations? So what is it for you? Well, sometimes it's when we're under pressure, right? When the credit card statement shows up in the mail and we see it and we forgot that we, or one of us forgot that we really needed to have a conversation on finances in our budget, right? We feel pressure to do it. We feel pressure to sit down and figure it out once and for all. Or we tend to react irrationally. When we have these conversations, when there's high emotion, then we are communicating out of emotion and logic has left the room. Or we get overwhelmed. Maybe we get flooded emotionally and so we just shut down and we withdraw. Maybe even thinking about these, maybe even thinking about the hot topics that we have leads to already revving our system up and thinking, wow, right? We don't have enough information or we simply just avoid them. So the first principle is starting with me first. It's kind of the Matthew 7 principle of before I look at the mote, right, in my spouse's eye, I need to take the beam out of my own eye. And so these questions really are self-reflection questions as we move into a difficult conversation. First is, what am I behaving like I want? When we step back from that conversation, okay, maybe the difficult conversation that we had on a specific topic, what did my behavior, from a third's eye view or from a reporter's view, what did my behavior show my spouse? One of the things that we had to do in grad training was to videotape our counseling sessions. And one of the interventions they had us do was videotape couples talking about a hot topic or a difficult conversation. We taped that, and then in the next session, we played that back to the couple themselves. And it's very interesting. For that couple to see them interacting together, and like light bulbs would come on. Wow, I was really coming off strong there. Or recognizing my body language really communicates. And that's one of the things we talked about is, what's the message here that you're getting? Not just the words that are said, right? But what's the message you're sending your spouse? And so that's really what we're looking at is, am I behaving like it's most important that I'm the one that's right in this conversation? Or am I behaving like my relationship with you is most important? What do I really want? At the end of the day, is it that I want to be right? Or is it I want to be understood? Is it I want resolution? What is it for you and for your spouse? For the relationship? And how would I behave if that's really at the heart of what I want? How would it look different? There was a research study that they talked about couples and an intervention that they did which helped them in the area of conflict resolution. And one of the things they had them do is, after a difficult conversation, a difficult topic for them, they sat down and they wrote it out. Not wrote it out word for word. They wrote out what happened from a third party that was neutral, but also had positive interest on the relationship. Now think about that. You have to have a little distance from the conversation probably to do that. But what they found is that was a helpful way of shifting perspective for them and the way they handled conflict and the way they communicated. So starting with the heart first. All right, next is, what do you do under stress? So all of us carry and wear stress differently. We just do. We all get stressed. That's part of our human experience. But what does it look like when you get stressed out? So this diagram here shows a couple things. First is, the center here, as you can see, is the pool of shared meaning. So the idea is, when we are dialoguing, and there is safety, you can see the circle around that. That means there's safety in the relationship, and we can communicate in a safe manner. That we are adding information to this pool that creates understanding, right? So we're dialoguing, which we understand perspective, which then changes the meaning. When we understand why that's so hard for our spouse or why it's so important for them. But what happens is, when we move out of safety, we use that stress in different ways. Some of us go to silence, which is, it reads there, withdrawing, avoidance, or just masking. No, not a problem, right? And some of us go to violence, right? This doesn't mean physical violence. It just means becoming more critical, and verbally, your tone of voice becomes more loud. Labeling sometimes occurs, or even trying to control the conversation. So as we think about starting with the heart, this is self-reflection. What tells you that you've moved out of the safety zone? That we're no longer having dialogue and pooled shared meaning? Do you go to silence or do you go to violence? What does that look like? And what about for your spouse? That awareness, right, then helps us create boundaries around that to create dialogue in safety. So the next skill here is, it's called path to action. And really, when you think about it, when we have conversations, it's really the interplay of what we're thinking in our head that impacts our feeling and the way we feel about ourselves, our spouse, that then ultimately impacts our behavior. Okay, so let's take an example here. All right, what you see in your, you hear, okay? Spouse says yes to an event with extended family before talking to you. That's what happened. You find out there's an event on the calendar, and your spouse didn't talk to you first. So what do? We start to fill in the blanks, right? We start to fill in the blanks. And so it might look like this. My voice really doesn't matter in this relationship. A possible story. Or our relationship takes back seat to in-laws, right? That my spouse isn't putting priority on a relationship. Then these stories, right, what we think affects how we feel. So we feel hurt, maybe inferior, or even ignored in the relationship, which then impacts, right, the how we act. Either going into silence and withdrawing and not saying anything, but being frustrated internally. Or, you know, in some ways, acting out the violent part of that. So one of the things that can be helpful in this example, right, is to retrace the steps. So if you think about it first, so you can see these arrows, right, is, have I fallen out of dialogue? So an awareness of, does my spouse feel safe and do I feel safe? That's the first component. Next, we move to, what emotions are making me react this way? That's the heart check. And what stories are creating these emotions? What am I telling myself? And then finally, what's the factual evidence that I have that supports this story? Factual meaning that a third party could see, hear, notice, not something that we're telling ourselves. So you work your way back to identify where I've fallen out. So let's talk a little bit about stories, okay, and the stories that we tell ourselves. So they broke it up into three primary stories. But there are others. But many fall into these categories, okay? So we'll talk about victim, villain, and helpless. So the first is the victim story. Sometimes that's the silent sufferer, right? That maybe you've made a mistake, and it's so much easier to forgive myself than forgive my spouse, right? When we make mistakes for some reason, because we have information there that our spouse doesn't. And so we play this tape of we're just the victim in this component, or the villain, right? This can come up when an interaction or a difficult conversation leads to hurt, right? Where we begin to label our spouse, not specifically as a villain, but as negative intent. So in this case, if I was late for a specific commitment, or my spouse was late for a specific commitment, and then I labeled Ange as, or I got frustrated and angry with her, right? And she might label me as inflexible. That would be villain. And then finally, helpless. There's nothing else I can do, right? So that would be, an example of that would be, maybe you view your spouse as a control freak. And so a helpless story would be, you know, it really doesn't matter. Regardless of what I say, they're not going to change. Right? So I don't bring it up. I don't communicate it. So the important thing is, one of these stories for you rings true that we navigate towards, is identifying what am I telling myself that's leading to these emotions that then moves me to silence or violence. Because becoming aware of that is helpful for this next step that we'll talk about. These questions are, again, first is identifying the stories that we tell ourselves, and then based on that story, asking ourselves questions. So notice these questions here. So first, if I'm telling myself I'm the victim, I'm the innocent sufferer, a good question to ask is, am I pretending not to notice my role in the problem? Because that's the component of the victim story is, it's not my fault. Right? Which then leads to not dialoguing. So it can be helpful just to reflect, if I often tell myself the victim story, is to ask this question. Or for the villain, why would a reasonable, rational, and decent person do this? Or finally, turn the helpless into able. What do I really want for me, for others, for the relationship? And what would I do right now if I really wanted these results? Which moves us in a place of engagement and dialogue rather than the helpless bystander. Next, watch out for the downward spiral. Proverbs 15:14 say, "The heart of him that hath understanding seeketh knowledge, but the mouth of fools feedeth on foolishness." So if you think about, if we had a temperature scale, and let's just say the low point was green, that's when we feel calm, we feel steady, flexible, we can think, make decisions fairly quickly. And as you go up in the thermometer, it moves to a yellow, which you start to become tense or stressed. You start to experience it in your body, your mind, maybe you have more thoughts. And ultimately, we move into, like, really hot, right? The red zone. Or some of you probably heard the fight or flight zone. And in those places, what happens is we are no longer rational, right? It'd be kind of like if we're sitting here and together and a bear jumped through that window, what happens? I'm sure you wouldn't think. You would just act, That's the way God designed our body. You wouldn't think, wonder if I should move, right? No, we would just like that. So what happens is, the way God's designed our bodies, when our emotions, when we're flooded with emotion up here in the red zone, that's a great place to tell ourselves stories. But the problem is, our stories are like this, meaning our judgment is narrowed. We're unable to see multiple perspectives when we're flooded with emotion, negative emotion. It just doesn't happen. And so just being aware of where is this zone for you and for your spouse. And I'd encourage you, I think it's a healthy thing to create boundaries around that and to say when either of us is in that red zone, we're not going to talk about it. It's a wonderful thing to sit down and talk, but when one of us is in the red zone, it usually doesn't go well. The point is creating space to calm and come back and communicate it, about it when we're in the yellow or the green zone. Okay, so the next skill is the acronym STATE, S-T-A-T-E, okay? And as you can see there on that screen, each letter stands for a particular skill. So the first is share your facts, okay? These are the what skills. The what skills, so again, the difficult dialogue, if we're thinking about the conversation or the event that happened related to the in-laws, that something showed up on the calendar, it wasn't communicated, right? So what are the facts that a third party could objectively identify? A fact wouldn't be a villain story or a victim story, right? It would be what actually happened. Then we tell your story. What is it? As you know the facts, what story do you end up going to? Ask for the other's path, and we'll walk through this, what this specifically looks like. And then the how skills are talk tentatively and encourage testing, meaning approach it in a way that you don't have all the answers or you don't have it figured out. You're just wondering, right? I'm just curious, with curiosity and openness for your spouse to challenge your story. Because if my heart is for understanding and connection, likely that's where I'll be, is in humility being able to accept and be willing to be open to my spouse challenging my stories, right? Okay, so let's go through some examples. So first, share the facts. I noticed. So in that situation with the in-laws, maybe I noticed it on our shared calendar that we're going this weekend to your family's house, right? That's what you saw. That's the facts. Then you tell your story. Based on the facts, I begin to conclude, right? This is what I begin telling myself, that maybe our relationship is taking back seat. So what you're doing is you're acknowledging the story you're telling yourself, but you're sharing that rather than keeping it right up here, which fuels the negative emotion. And then finally, the third point is ask for the other's path. So what's their story? What are their facts? What are their stories? What's their perspective? Talk tentatively. So using things like, I was wondering, perhaps you're unaware, right? Tentativeness, which leads the door open for dialogue and creates safety with our spouse. But at the same time, not being overly passive about what we're sharing. And then finally, encourage testing. Do you see it differently? What am I missing here? Or what do I have wrong? So being open to challenging, being open to testing, and as we approach our spouse in that manner. So another key component as we think about even sharing the facts, telling our story, you know, this is how I see it, but help me understand here. Do I have something wrong? Did I miss something? Does that sound a little bit different than coming to them maybe in a critical way, filled with emotion, saying this is what happened, right? So, but one of the things that can be helpful too is remembering that safety depends on two pieces, these two components here: mutual purpose and mutual respect. So if mutual purpose or respect are at risk, it is no longer safe for dialogue. So if I don't feel respected, do I feel safe to continue dialogue with you? No. I am focused on trying to save my own back, right? In that conversation, that interaction. So the idea is, and mutual purpose is, do I believe my spouse really cares, right? That they have my best interest in mind, that we have the same, they really care about our goals, about our dreams, our hopes. Well, if that's not in place, it's going to be really hard to have safety in dialogue, isn't it? So the idea is when one of these components is lost, it leads to not feeling safe and moving to silence or violence. So what do we do when these happen? How do we move back into safety? If you're not feeling respected, what does that look like? Or if you don't feel like your purpose is not the same. So the first is simply acknowledging and taking responsibility, right? Apologizing for maybe the way that you communicated or you came off too strong. And by taking the first step in apologizing, that can create safety within the relationship, right? An opportunity to communicate. And the next one is using what's called a contrasting statement. So often what we do in communicating is we communicate what we want, what we need. And again, that can be a wonderful thing. And in difficult conversations, when emotions are higher and it's been challenging and maybe we've had multiple conversations where it hasn't went well, is it's also helpful to explain what I don't want, what I don't want to be concluded, okay? So for the specific example that we've been talking about with the in-laws is, I don't mean to question your intentions. I do want to clarify our decision-making process. So right out of the gate is, this is what I don't want to happen. I know it may seem like that. I know it may sound like that. But I don't want this to happen. Now, obviously, this is not a tool of manipulation. That has to be true. That has to be congruent with what we feel and our heart. So I don't mean to question your intentions, but I do. But this is what I want. This is my heart. Addresses other concerns that they don't respect them. And again, you're communicating respect right out of the gate, which leads to safety and dialogue. So then next is, once we've got to that point, we've shared it, we continue to have mutual dialogue and there's safety, and you've shared the facts and tentatively shared your story. Now it's time to ask their path, right? Or ask their story, or ask how they got there. And so it's exploring, right, the other's path. So seeking in truth of understanding, not disapproving the other point of view. So really what we're trying to understand, and certainly I'm sure each of you have heard, simple reflection statements can be really helpful. One of the things within couples that we often talk about is a skill that's called speaker-listener technique. And essentially what it is really slowing down the conversation, right? Where the speaker, each of you have a role, one of you is the speaker. One of you is the listener, and the speaker shares a little bit, doesn't go on for 10 or 15 minutes, but keeps it short, and then the listener simply paraphrases. And so really that's what we're talking about here, is when you're listening to your spouse's story, facts, is that you reflect that back to them. Because here's the thing, the message that we communicate is not just in words, right? It's in body language or tone of voice or facial expressions that perhaps some that we've learned even from our own family growing up that may mean different things to to different individuals, right? Your spouse in particular. And so simply reflecting back what you heard is reflecting back that message and gives them a chance to challenge it. And then lastly, I want to leave you with this verse, Colossians 4:6. It says, "Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person." Ted talked in his talk, he talked a lot about gratitude and graciousness. If you think about this, the message, as I read this, is communicating in a gracious way, but not only that, seasoned with salt, flavor. And so when we speak with our spouse, being able to communicate in a way that's gracious, but also preserves, if you think about salt, preserving our relationship, that it has that in mind, that my heart is for a deeper connection, a deeper closeness, and an understanding.